This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Off the second hour of the program, the number is 603-283-6160. Bring up whatever is on your mind. Here tonight, it's Ian.
And Arya.
And Mark.
And we also have Mark out there as well. We've been talking about Bitcoin's birthday 14 years ago, January 3rd, 2009. Bitcoin was created. Bitcoin was released. I guess it was being created prior to that, but it was released to the public. Anyone who wanted to could download the software and begin mining Bitcoin, which at the time was worth absolutely nothing, but you'd get 50 Bitcoin. Every 10 minutes would go to the lucky miner that was able to mine the block into existence. And by the way, the Bitcoin continues to this day. It's roughly every 10 minutes that a new block, quote-unquote, is mined. And what that means is that every transaction that has been entered, if you will, someone has said, I want to send somebody Bitcoin or whatever. They put a put an entry into the blockchain's what they call mempool. And then when the mining of the block happens and all of those waiting transactions are then officially made permanent on the Bitcoin blockchain.
A portion of them.
At least a megabyte's worth of them.
Right.
So if there's too many transactions, then only the ones that are paying the most will get into that block, and the rest have to wait.
And this is why... I can't get into the technical reasons for it, but this is why Bitcoin SV made one of the best decisions ever by removing the block size definition on the blockchain.
Right.
I wish that the other blockchains would do it.
Yeah, and we had Ratspeed on the line just a few moments ago who was advocating that Bitcoin Cash was the one true Bitcoin. And look, I am not a maximalist of any coin. I am someone who believes that as long as the coin works for the purposes of what it's supposed to do and it does it affordably, then I like it, right? So I like that Bitcoin Cash works cheap. I like that Dash works cheap. Monero, I like that it's private. And Bitcoin SV also works cheap from what I understand. The problem, of course, is that Bitcoin SV was headed up. The Bitcoin SV problem is a personal problem. The Bitcoin SV problem isn't so much a technological issue. It's the guy that is its biggest proponent is a what appears to be a total scumbag.
Yeah, he's a complete hack.
Yeah, and he sues everybody who says something about him, so I'm surprised we haven't gotten hit with a lawsuit yet, but we're probably just not large enough as far as influence. Our friend Roger Ver, of course, has been sued multiple times by the gentleman's name is Craig Wright. And he loses time after time after time after bringing these fallacious, frivolous cases against people just for saying things that he doesn't like. And so the fact that they've got this guy sort of at the helm as their spokesman or whatever is what really has sunk Bitcoin SV as a viable competitor to Bitcoin. But the truth is, Bitcoin SV, if you want to go with what's the most like the original Bitcoin, it's Bitcoin SV. There's no doubt about it.
It is.
As far as the Bitcoin, the quote-unquote Bitcoin brothers or the Bitcoin options that are out there. Well, because Bitcoin Cash has had upgrades.
So what Ratspeed was saying was that at the moment in time that Bitcoin Cash became Bitcoin Cash, that it was had a better claim, to his mind,
that's true.
Than Bitcoin did to the name Bitcoin, BTC. Bitcoin
absolutely
BTC
true.
Did.
Yep, I totally agree with that.
I don't know. We didn't get a chance to talk to him, and I don't think it really particularly matters. It's much more of a how many angels and heads of pins and all this good sort of thing. You know, which one is most like Bitcoin? You know, I don't know that that matters. I think that what matters is what people want and what people like. And I wonder about the marketing tool of saying, for instance, ladies and gentlemen, the 2023 Model T Ford, right? Like, who cares? Yeah. I mean, you know, like, you can't even roll out a Model T Ford right now in America. There's so many of the CAFE standards and all these sorts of things. You'd be thrown in under the prison just for trying to sell a Model T Ford, as a new car.
Well, and of course I'm being accused in the chat room of simping for Bitcoin SV, and nothing could be further from the truth. I am not a fan of Bitcoin SV. I think it's just an absolute dumpster fire of a cryptocurrency. I was just simply saying, from the perspective of somebody that wants the one that's quote-unquote true to the original Bitcoin, that's the one that is closest. But, Mark, you make a great point. It's like, why is that valuable to people? What is, Bitcoin's once every 10-minute block. I mean, every other cryptocurrency that has come out since then has been faster than that as far as its ability to
confirm
transactions.
Is it Litecoin every 5?
2.5.
Okay.
Yeah, they did a...
I mean, there's benefits.
If anybody wants to know which one makes my heart flutter just a little bit, the one that I'm truly in love with, the answer is Monero.
Oh, okay. Mark's is an arrow man now. That's good.
I've been over here. I was curious because I know I've been, you know, kicking this horse that is the blockchain block size definitions for a very long time. So I was curious when I first talked about the need to remove blockchains block size definitions from Bitcoin, and it was 5 years ago.
That was when you first talked about it.
I can't find the full article. I just found sort of a mirror of it. But yeah, 5 years ago, the article is why we need to remove, why Bitcoin block size definitions must be removed.
And they haven't done a damn thing.
No,
since
and
that
it's
time.
It's killing the network.
Yeah, it's too bad.
It causes the individuals, the people out there trying to use Bitcoin, to spend more money to compete with each other,
right?
Instead of how it should work, which is the miners are competing with one another to claim our transactions, because the more transactions they claim, the more money they should make. They should be competing with each other, but they're not. They've cartelized.
Well, and this goes back to what Ratspeed he referenced, but we didn't get into in detail, was the fact that bankers started paying a company back in 2015, 2016, somewhere in that range, that, what do they call, Blockstream?
Stream.
Blockstream. Yeah. They started paying this company called Blockstream to then pay the developers, the key developers of Bitcoin, a salary. You know, that's a great thing, right? Like, we're going to pay these guys. They're doing something good. Hey, but then they, of course, became owned by Blockstream and sort of the vision for that company, which was to keep Bitcoin slow and keep it small and keep it to where it's full. Keep it to where the network is constantly full of transactions, to where, as what you were saying, Arya, people are bidding up the price of the fees in order to get their transactions ahead of the rest of them. And we saw what happened in 2017, where fees were going up to $5, $6, $10 per transaction. It hasn't gone that high since that time, but it could. Yep. If Bitcoin ever became as popular as, if there was ever such a run on it as there was back in 2017, you would see those fees go up again. Maybe that'll never happen.
We've seen transaction costs go as high as $100 now.
In 2017. You
know, well, it depends on how much data you're sending, right? If you're sending from 15 different, because you're using an HD wallet, and I don't want to get into the technicals of what that is, but if you're basically sending from 15 different wallets to send half a Bitcoin because each one has 0.001 Bitcoin in it, that's going to cost you a lot more.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep, sure is. And I did talk to a Blockstream guy at one of the conventions. I can't remember which one it was, but I'm sure you were at it too, Ian. But we, somehow or another, I got sat at a table with him. And I tried to get an explanation out of him on the small blocker argument. Couldn't get one that made sense. I mean, so far I have yet to hear a small blocker make an argument that I can understand as to why, they want what they want. But I'd also like to point out that there's sin on the other side too. There's sin on the big blocker side, which is to say that Bitcoin Foundation existed before Blockstream. They attempted to pay these developers something, but nobody could kind of come up with who should pay them, and nobody wanted to donate to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the donation model didn't work in kind of the way it doesn't work with Free Talk Live, right? Like, when Blockstream came in and said, hey, don't worry, we'll pay them, we the banks, maybe the CIA, we're not entirely sure who it is, but we'll pay them, don't worry. That's it. And that's not the banks or the CIA's fault. That's the people who refuse to pony up the money initially. That's their fault.
Well, I'm not going to blame people who didn't want to pay for something that they already were getting for free. I can understand why that is. You know, I'm sure their perspective was, well, Bitcoin works fine.
If you live in a fantasy land where things are free, Ian, you're going to pay the consequences. If you're not paying, you're the product.
Well, the fact is, these programmers should have had some principles, you know, instead of letting themselves be owned by some bankers for $50,000 a year. Or
well, their principle
was
to make money, right? What's more libertarian than that?
But that wasn't the principle of Bitcoin. The principle of Bitcoin
right.
was to undermine the financial system and give the power of money back to the individual for the first time ever.
But the miners were interested.
We still aren't certain who Blockstream is. It's just conspiracy theory who Blockstream is.
No, it's not. They come right out on their website and tell you who their investors are.
Did they say that back in 2018 or whenever?
I'm pretty sure they did, yeah, because they had to do public funding rounds.
Well, I couldn't tell you, but what I can tell you...
I can tell you, AXA Bank, Digital Currency Group, which is made up by MasterCard, among others. So those are two of the big ones.
Yeah, the FTC,
I'm concerned, if you think that things are going to go along for free, you are living in a fantasy world. And if you live in a fantasy world, expect reality to come smack you in the face on the regular.
But nothing was free in here,
it was
right?
darn close to free.
But no, because...
The devs thought it was free because they weren't getting paid, Aria.
You paid the price. Well, developing something like this is always going to be a labor of love, right? No one... There's no organization to pay the Bitcoin developers for paying it.
Well, that's what he's bemoaning. He's bemoaning the fact that somebody tried to raise money for them, apparently, and they didn't get enough.
But
and so the bankers outbid them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and now I don't
bankers,
understand what
and the... And to the winner goes the spoils, and there you are, Bitcoin of the spoils.
Yeah, it sucks, but I mean that's the way it happened.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, but there's no guarantee that even if people had ponied up money, that these people wouldn't have been outbid by the bankers. I mean,
I'm saying that if you don't learn the lessons that life teaches you, and this is a lesson, and there is a lesson to learn from it, then you are doomed to repeat it. And what you're saying is, but why the poor people, and why couldn't the developers, why didn't the developers work for free? Well, I'll tell you why they didn't work for free, because that's not what we call work.
Well, you don't understand free software, Mark. There's developers all over the planet that work for free to develop software. Linux, of course, is a great example of it.
Satoshi Nakamoto.
I mean, there's a ton of people that have done this. Now, they have ways of monetizing, for instance. So, for instance, with Linux or with, like, Ubuntu, you don't have to pay for the software. But if you want to get somebody to give you, you know, a tutorial, if you want to have them, you know, walk you through how you use the software, you got to pay for that, right? Like, so there's some paid support that you can do. And in the case of Bitcoin, the developers were doing it ostensibly because they thought it was a good idea, but the idea that they couldn't somehow monetize that, hello, you're a developer, you can mine Bitcoin just like the rest of people can, and then you work on the software to make it better to make sure that your investment works out in the long run. I mean, it had its incentives.
By 2018, mining wasn't a viable way for developers to make money. Now, if they had been in for a long time and they had, had the foresight to do such a thing, but let's remember that Andreas Antonopoulos, one of the early voices of Bitcoin, his claim was he didn't really have any Bitcoin. When, you know, I don't remember when this was, like 2017 or something like that. He's like, when asked how much Bitcoin does he have, he's like, I really don't have any. I've always just kind of gone around and spent it and used it and talked about it, but I never held on to it. You know, the foresight that some have had isn't the same as the foresight of others. And I would say that I am very familiar in working in projects for free. Free Talk Live exists in part because, in total, because you and I chose to work on it for free for a number of years. And yep. Right now I'd say, hey, what am I getting paid for tonight? And the answer is nothing. Because I'm here working on a labor of love for free.
Well, right. Activism tends to not be very financially rewarding. And that's just the reality. But I get what you're saying. You're bemoaning the fact that not enough people ponied up to essentially pay these developers, and so they were easily able to be snatched up by the banks.
I'm not just bemoaning that. I'm bemoaning that humans continue to do such a thing. Like, expect, like, they keep on expecting things to just exist for free. Look at the newspapers online dying because, and journalism is dying because people won't pay for what they want to consume in the form of news.
Why would because we live in a world where we don't have to pay for this stuff anymore.
Why would someone want to pay for the New York Times?
I don't know about the New York Times, but I'm going to tell you that journalism, people still want to consume that. They still want to read news stories, but they want to read them for free.
Well, now you can go to, Substack, and you can subscribe to Edward Snowden, or you can subscribe to Glenn Greenwald, and you can get their news, their opinion, or whatever, directly from them, which you can read for free, but it does hit you with the opportunity to subscribe. I suspect a very small percentage
of people... I hope that model works.
I don't know if it does. I suspect a small percentage of people will subscribe, just like in the same way a small percentage of our listeners subscribe to the Free Talk Live AMPS program. But the reality is, I mean, there's so much competition out there these days that the people who used to make good money doing journalism, they're going to have to work a lot harder, and they're not going to make as much money.
Works or doesn't work is kind of irrelevant at this point. The fact of the matter is that that's the game that's in town. That's what you got to do. That's the way you can make any money whatsoever.
If you want to stay in journalism, if you want to stay in, you know, entertainment,
maybe it's only $10 an article versus the $5,000 an article you were making 2 years ago, but it's the only way. The alternative is to run advertising, clickbait ads and stuff like that on your website, and
that's crap.
That's not going to bring you anything either.
Well, the clickbait ads supposedly bring quite a bit of revenue, but I don't know the answer.
Seems to be drying up as far as I can tell.
Then maybe I'm not paying that much attention to these things anymore. But what I can say is that the consumer, I think that the consumer is to blame in part too. Not just as a journalist, at some point or another, you're going to get tired of chasing smaller and smaller, payouts. And you're going to be like, you know what? I can go work someplace else.
Go work at McDonald's.
I can do something else. Yeah. Well, I doubt McDonald's is going to be their choice, Ian.
At least until you get replaced by an automation system. They now have McDonald's. There's a test market in, I think, Fort Worth, Texas, where they've rolled out completely automated drive-through technology.
What happens when the supply of journalists go down, Mark? Because they're like, screw this, I'm not making enough money, I'm going to go get a different career doing something else. What happens to the rest of the journalists?
Then their spaces will be filled by people who are willing to do the work for quote-unquote free. And what that means is that you will no longer have quote-unquote unbiased journalism.
You don't have that
You'll
now.
Have people, I don't know that we ever
Mic
did.
Drop.
But
yeah.
I don't think anybody's won this. What I'm trying to tell you is, what I'm just trying to say is that, hey, look, you know, there ain't nothing for free. There's no such thing as a free lunch. There's no free news. There's no free nothing.
No, but the fact is, news, competition drives prices down.
Mark is coming at this from such an old media perspective. It's like he didn't listen to last night's show at all.
But he did listen, based on what he was saying. The fact is, there's more competition now than ever before. And that's the point that I made in my email this week to the radio industry explaining why we've dropped 72% of our commercial inventory from at least our online feeds, and radio stations now have two fewer breaks an hour, explaining to them that, look, radio used to be sitting pretty. It used to be. 30 years ago, if you were in radio, your only competition, at least as far as audio entertainment was concerned, was the station across town or the stations across town. And that was it.
I mean, now we're competing with Tim Pool, and I guarantee you he's not going to commercial break even once an hour.
Yeah, I've never watched the guy's show.
I don't either.
I've only seen
he
clips.
May be going to
commercial. Doesn't he use YouTube ads?
I have no idea.
Well, he's one of those shows that's so popular, he just keeps getting donations all night. Like, there's people just throwing money at this guy, you know, just because he's so popular. So that's one of them. So they're connecting directly with their viewers and with their listeners. But the point I was making to the radio stations is, you know, radio used to be sitting pretty. We had no competition. And then all of a sudden in the year 2000 or thereabouts, online streaming started to become a thing. It wasn't really much competition, but it was there. And then 5 years later at 2005, podcasts became a thing where you could then automatically deliver an MP3 file to listeners that wanted to receive it without any kind of clicking having to happen. They just woke up in the morning and there it was on their MP3 player. And that's become much more popular in the last 15 or so years. And then you add the smart speakers that came out within the last decade. You add into that satellite radio, of course, which is another competitor. And there's so many other listening options now for the average person. Radio cannot keep going about doing things the way they've done things forever. And that's true for everybody. It's true for journalism now as well. There used to be the newspaper. It was rare that newspapers even had a second paper, but some places, some bigger markets had a second daily paper. Now you can't find that.
Let's talk about Howard Stern for a second.
Well, before we do that, let's carry on with Ian's point just a tad bit further. Your point about, you know, people wanting stuff for free, because that's it may be the consumer's fault. I don't know, but when I listen to content, when I listen to a show or a podcast or watch a video, it is free. It damn well better stay free. And if it's not, I'm going to go find one that is. And if I really like the content, I will subscribe to them via Patreon or something like that. Because I have subscribed to a couple of websites and, you know, creators with Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
But if a single one of them ever says, you have to pay a dollar to listen to this podcast, I'm out.
The Patreon offers free things to people get things early. They'll get special content, Patreon content, and a variety of things. There's ways to do that. So you could very well they could very well be releasing content, a podcast, for instance, that you've got to pay to get.
Not quite what I meant. But you are.
Well,
correct.
What I mean is that people like Howard Stern, maybe Rush Limbaugh, who's then of course dead. A variety of content producers can say, you know what? I need to get paid the way I need to get paid. And if you want to listen to Howard Stern, you're going to have to do it in a small variety of ways. Among them being the SiriusXM channel.
That's the only way you can do it.
Is it? I don't know.
That's why they pay him, what they pay him, because
and they pay him
exclusive.
A tremendous amount. And if they didn't, if they weren't getting subscribers, they wouldn't be able to pay him.
Are they still getting subscribers?
They're still getting subscribers. How does Joe Rogan get paid what he gets paid when his isn't his free?
Spotify pays him.
That's what I mean.
Spotify puts ads in his show, I would presume.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that they did with us when we were.
But he's not behind a paywall.
Well, Spotify has said Joe Rogan is valuable enough that we will pay him and put ads in
him. He's not behind a paywall if you subscribe to Spotify. Like, I could go listen to a show and not be serving the ads because I have a premium Spotify account.
But can you subscribe to him without subscribing to Spotify?
Yes, but then you'll get the ads.
Got it. But still,
Spotify
he's not behind a paywall.
Has a platform. And, they think that Joe Rogan's valuable enough to, they'll forward to their platform.
The number here, if you want to join us, 603-283-6160. You can bring up whatever's on your mind, whether it's automation, the increase in choices in the market, driving prices down, or whatever is on your mind here tonight on Free Talk Live. More coming up.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
USA News Update. House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy is still without the votes to become Speaker of the House. Following three rounds of voting, the first time the House has needed more than one to elect a Speaker in a century, Oklahoma Republican Representative Tom Cole made a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn until noon tomorrow.
The question is on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The ayes have it. The motion is adopted. The House stands adjourned until noon tomorrow.
McCarthy was unable to get the 218 votes needed to become Speaker due to opposition from hardline Republicans. He has vowed to continue fighting for the position, while conservative opponents say they're committed to changing the status quo no matter how many rounds it takes. Arrangements are being made to bring back University of Idaho murder suspect Brian Koberger to the state after he waived extradition in Pennsylvania. Jeremy Scott, USA News.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is the perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. That's 800-721-2477. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Powdy Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. shopsupertea.com.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Talk Live. The phones are open here. If you want to join the show, the number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Ian, Aria, Mark joining you tonight. And you can join us online anytime you want. Want to say thank you to Thomas Knapp, who is a Free Talk Live supporter of our AMPS program. You can join AMPS and join Thomas over there at amps.freetalklive.com. That's amps.freetalklive.com. That stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. This is a way for you to directly support what we do, which is becoming more and more important. I mean, we saw the vision for this in 2005 when we launched AMP. That's how long this has been around now. It's been around for more than, 17 years, helping support Free Talk Live directly, helping us get the word out to other radio stations, because even though radio is certainly, doesn't have the influence that it used to, it still has a lot of incumbency. There's still a lot of stations, a lot of people listening on a regular basis. We are seeing the numbers go down over time as we're seeing other listening methods. And when I say we, I mean the industry, just right. Generally, when they do studies and they look at, well, how do you listen to your audio entertainment? There's a lot more people these days that listen to podcasts than ever before. So we know the competition's out there. Of course, we do have our own podcast. But if you want to connect directly with us, then the AMPS program is the way to do that. And thank you, Thomas, for stepping up. It's $5 a month. That's all we're asking for. And it's amps.freetalklive.com. That is where you can go to sign up for that and get some of the perks that we have access to, like the AMP Only podcast, which has our full radio show without any of the recorded commercials. Let's go to Phil in California. Phil, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Okay, first of all, I want to say I'm not that weirdo who called up yesterday, but I did want to talk about Elon Musk. I don't know what to think of this, but he's putting out all these tweets. He's got a Venn diagram with, 1984, Brave New World, Paradise 451. And then his one tweet that caught my eye here was, it says, U.S. government agency demanded suspension of 250,000 accounts, including journalists and Canadian officials.
Wow.
So I just want, if he's putting out all this stuff, I mean, where's he coming from? Like, I don't know what to think of this guy. What do you guys?
Well, we've been covering a lot of it here. I did see he released something fresh today, and I didn't take the time to look at that this particular one. It just seemed more sort of in the same theme of the old Twitter would do whatever the government asked without a warrant. The feds would just send emails to Twitter and say, ban these accounts, XYZ, do this, jump through these hoops, and Twitter would say, how high, and then they would, you know, jump through the hoops. And so it's been example after example after. It's been exhaustive in the last few months. I figured the Twitter files was going to be like, you know, a few and done. Yeah. And it just keeps on coming. So, I mean, I think he's doing the world a real favor of showing exactly how hand in hand, how linked together at the hips and the elbows and the heads that the federal government and this social media company, and you know it's true in Facebook too, how truly linked they are.
He has stopped just short of saying, hey guys, you've been wondering how Twitter was managing to stay afloat while operating at a loss and not making any money? Well, the government.
They did say they were getting payments, like millions of dollars in payments. That was one of them.
Yeah, it's basically exactly what happened to Bitcoin that we just discussed in the segment before last, where essentially people didn't want to pony up the money to support a platform that they used and enjoyed, and then turns out the government came in and took it over.
It's always the consumer's fault, Mark.
I'm just saying, if you don't pay for something, you know, you
that
don't
deserve it. That doesn't guarantee you anything. You could have paid Twitter $5 a month. They had a payment system. It could have been a bunch of money rolling to Twitter, and then the government comes in with $5 million more, and they're like, sure, we'll take that too. And
some spoiled white billionaire comes in with $40 billion.
Sell out all of their users. They have no loyalty to them. They're going to do what they're going to do. Anyway, Phil, what do you think?
Well, I mean, the big thing is, like, I mean, it kind of gives credence to, you know, the whole conspiracy theory, how Facebook started off as a government operation.
Yeah.
What is it, LifeLock or whatever? And, it gives more credence to it, makes me wonder. Because I used to laugh at that kind of stuff. Because if you remember when Facebook started, it used to be just for high school and college kids. I don't know.
Yeah, but we grew up. High school and college kids won't go anywhere near it. It was for people who were age 18 to 25, and now those people are age 30 to 40.
Yeah, and I mean, young people don't use it. They're on TikTok's probably just, I mean, the algorithm, like all this stuff that all the conservatives talk about. It's legitimate. I do enjoy some conservative talk radio, even though it's just not my... It's not my range, but I like Matt Walsh or whatever and that stuff.
That guy has a talk show?
He has a talk show. It's an hour, a daily hour he has. I think he does it's a podcast of his videos he puts out on YouTube, I believe.
Gotcha.
It's definitely, like, I enjoy some of the stuff he puts out, but it's kind of good getting a wide variety of where everyone's coming from.
Yeah, that's always good to keep your horizons out there and receive different opinions. Phil, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate you calling in here tonight and sharing that with us. The Twitter files are continuing. I don't think they've even gotten into the COVID thing. Musk said they've got Twitter files COVID edition coming in early 2023.
I'm not at all surprised to hear that. I saw an article today. I don't care about sports, but this one caught my eye for whatever reason. This 24-year-old professional NFL football player
that had a heart attack, or
cardiac
something?
Arrest.
Did he die
in the middle of a play? No, he's at the hospital. But like,
was he vaccinated?
The article didn't say, but we know he was. Mm-hmm. With all of the restrictions the NFL put on people, he was absolutely vaccinated. I'm not saying that caused him to go into cardiac arrest, but I'm saying 24-year-old professional athlete.
You don't normally hear about 24-year-olds having cardiac arrest issues.
Especially not professional athletes. I'll give you the 300-pound 24-year-old having a cardiac issue. Sure. 300 pounds.
Okay, yeah.
But the 24-year-old professional athlete,
that's good
probably not.
Mark, your thoughts on Twitter files? Anything you want to share on that?
Well, I found Elon Musk to be very interesting since he's acquired Twitter.
Yeah.
And, again, some of these people out there I like because of the people that they piss off as opposed to liking them for who they are. I'm mm-hmm. still waiting to decide whether or not I think that Elon Musk is some kind of savior. But
he's not. He's got his own problems.
I tend to think not.
But for what he's doing, I appreciate. I mean, I can see the good that he's doing, for sure, at least in this case. I don't know if he's doing good every time he's doing things. Like, you know, Neuralink looks a little suspicious.
He seems to me just like an edgelord.
I mean, with a lot of money.
Yeah. Everything that I've ever seen from Elon Musk, nothing I've seen conflicts with that mm-hmm. description of him. He's just trying to be as edgy as possible.
I appreciate
maybe
the work
some
he's
of it's sincere,
right,
maybe it isn't, but I don't know that he's got a principled bone in his body. He just, what's going to trigger the libtards, right?
That could be a principle.
I guess. And Musk doesn't necessarily come at it from a point of view of, I want to trigger the liberals or whatever, but he's not far from that.
I mean, he spent $44 billion on buying a website that was hemorrhaging cash in order to apparently trigger the libtards. So,
okay, fair point.
Yeah, there's some principle there. Let's go to Crichton on the line in Kentucky. Crichton, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hi. I actually wanted to call in tonight because Bonnie mentioned the other day, she was talking about homeschooling. My wife homeschooled 5.
Okay.
And
wow.
And I can say with certainty that it's a mixed bag. There is, as part of the problem that my wife has been going through lately, is because the 3 youngest of our children were adopted former wards of the state. Mm. And in the state of Kentucky, on paper and in the state constitution, the right of the parent to educate their children as you see fit is guaranteed.
Okay.
But in practice, if I could get them to admit in court that homeschooling a former ward of the state is the root of the problem, I would win immediately.
The root of what problem?
My wife was facing charges, and now we're still dealing with the state.
I did not remember that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. What were the charges about?
I can't tell you what the charges were.
Oh. Okay.
But they were BS. They were nonsense. And if I could get them to admit in court, it's about the fact that the state does not like homeschooling,
mm-hmm.
I would win immediately.
Mm.
But they're not dumb enough to admit it in court.
Sure.
And that is my wife's biggest problem with the idea of moving to New Hampshire, is that, yes, all the things that look good, all the laws look good, but what is the secret policy of state child protective services? That is the problem.
Got to be better than what's going on in Kentucky.
You mean, what is their policy in regards to homeschoolers?
Yeah, what is the real policy? What really happens when you go up against the state, when you get sideways with the state?
Well, I think the better question is, will homeschooling your kids be enough to get you sideways with the state? In New Hampshire, that answer seems to be no.
I mean, there's a huge homeschooling movement here in New Hampshire that whenever there's any kind of bill in the state house that threatens homeschool rights, if you will, in any way, shape, or form, basically the homeschoolers make a field day or field trip out of that, and they all come out, they bring all their kids to the state house, and they all pile into whatever the hearing is on this particular bill, and they just overwhelm that particular committee with their numbers and their influence.
And
it never goes anywhere.
That has happened here for the past 20 years, too.
Yeah.
The Homeschool Legal Defense Association... I'm sorry.
I'm curious, Crichton, what happens if, so it's wards of the state. I wonder what happens if you just pick up and move from the state that they were formerly wards of to another state. I would think the new state probably doesn't feel the sort of level of ownership that the previous one did.
And that would have been wonderful if I could have done that before this went down.
Yeah. And then I would be curious what would happen to their case if you just happened to move out of the state. They didn't take the kids away from you, right?
Yes, they did.
God.
Very sorry to hear that.
Did they take all of your kids or just the former wards?
Just the former wards?
The natural-born kids are all adults.
Okay.
It was all the former wards.
And I'm sure that you love them too. What I would say regarding New Hampshire is that New Hampshire has its hands full when it comes to homeschoolers, but it's still after anybody who wants to raise their kids on their own in a particularly sovereign fashion. So, for instance, Jay, who was a former co-host here on Free Talk Live, is having problems over what appears to be nothing. Somebody said that there's kids there running around and, off the cops come to the house. So all these things happen.
I think somebody
inside of the United States.
I mean, I'm not defending what this person was alleging or anything like that, but the allegation had to do with something with leaving a kid in a car or whatever. And I think they should be allowed to do that, and I don't know all the details, but that's supposedly what set DCYF on them in the first place.
As I said, doing things that would have been fine when I was a kid, they're always a problem.
Yeah.
You're going to have these problems in the United States because the United States just is scared to death of raising kids.
Well, as I understand it, in New Hampshire, and you really ought to talk to some people here who are in the homeschool movement, Crichton, because they would be able to tell you for sure on this. But my understanding is that if the state doesn't know you have kids, then they don't know you have kids, and they don't know you're homeschooling or whatever. And so if you've never had them registered in the government schools, then they don't know you have the kids. You see what I'm saying? So, like, if you had kids in the government school in New Hampshire, and then you said, we're going to homeschool, then you'd sort of be on the list of people who are homeschooling. But if you just move into New Hampshire and you're homeschooling your kids, then that's it.
And that's a really good point. And it wouldn't affect your kids at all, going into adulthood or anything like that, because I've never in my life been asked for my GED or my high school diploma or even my college degree.
Sure. So that's something to consider.
There's another topic I was tempted to touch on.
Okay.
About Mark commenting that he never got an explanation as to why there is a 1 megabyte limit on the size of a block in a blockchain.
Okay. He never got it from a Bitcoin programmer specifically, I believe. He was asking someone at a convention.
No. I mean, what I considered a cogent argument for the small block, and I never really understood it. Yeah, other than
well, Satoshi put forward such an argument way back in the day when he introduced it, and the argument was to help prevent 51% attacks.
Right, to prevent 51% attacks by having more hubs.
I thought it was to prevent spam on the blockchain.
Maybe that was it.
Yeah, I don't think it was 51% attacks.
I can answer this question.
Go ahead.
The answer to the question is that the market mechanism is designed to become expensive on purpose to force development of side chains and parallel payment processing networks.
But that's certainly a theory.
That wasn't what Satoshi had foreseen, as I understand.
That wasn't what Satoshi argued either.
Not in his white paper, but I actually spoke to the man on email.
Oh, really?
On the original Bitcoin instance.
Mm-hmm.
I know this is part of the point. I've talked to these people in the past. It's a market mechanism. It is designed to force the development of parallel payment systems.
But that wasn't what Satoshi said, was it? That's what they're saying.
Yes.
Satoshi told you this?
Yes.
Okay.
Or whoever had the Satoshi handle in the original Bitcoin.org instance before it was wiped out and replaced.
What was that forum?
12 years ago. The original Bitcoin, BitcoinTalk.org, okay. That was the name of it, the original one.
This is a little test. I want to see if you knew the actual name of the forum, and you did. So that gives you credibility.
12 years, 13 years ago now.
That's interesting because originally my understanding was the Bitcoin had no limit initially when Satoshi first released it. Then Satoshi implemented the block restriction because of quote unquote spam, and I'm not really sure what that meant.
I didn't remember the exact reasons.
But I believe that the intention was to raise that over time. Now, you're saying, Crichton, that your understanding from an actual conversation with Satoshi is that he did not intend to raise the block size?
It's not that he didn't intend to raise the block size, but he wanted a limit, a rational limit on the block size to force the market to develop these alternative payment systems.
Can you provide the proof for that? Because that's an interesting claim.
No, because that original instance has ceased to exist.
Mm. All right.
I couldn't prove it.
Okay. Crichton, thank you for the call tonight. I appreciate it. Let's continue here. Joe in Maryland, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, how's everybody doing? Hope you're doing well.
What's on your mind tonight? Go ahead.
Okay. The guy you were trying to think of earlier was Paul Bell, the criminal who got caught in Brazil.
Oh, the supposed alleged Satoshi, possible Satoshi. What was his name? Paul what?
Paul LaBelle.
LaBelle, okay.
I think that's the guy.
Yeah, it is the guy. Mm-hmm. He was a real strange dude because I saw a documentary on him and stuff like that. He's got the only code that, other than Toshi's, that's never been cracked. He still haven't cracked his computer.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about him. I remember reading something about the allegations behind why he could be Satoshi, and I remember it being pretty persuasive. I just don't remember any of the details.
It was certainly wasn't. I think I was on the same.
He's a brilliant mathematician.
Mm.
Yeah. I wasn't persuaded to the point where I'm like, yes, this guy is Satoshi. I'm like, huh? If I had to place a bet on someone being Satoshi, that's who I would place my bet on.
Well, one thing's for sure, if Satoshi is not dead, and there's a good chance that he or she has passed away at this point, but if Satoshi is not dead, they would be a fool to reveal themselves at some point in the future, because all of the weight
they'd
of the government, yeah, I mean, all of the weight of the state, the governments of the world that hate Bitcoin would come right down on that person's head.
Exactly.
Well, that was sort of proved with Craig Wright. I mean, once he said, "I'm Satoshi," then the Australian government just went after him and went after him and went after him.
Yeah, they did.
Well, isn't Craig Wright Australian, though, and a liar?
Well, yeah, but they still went after him.
For what?
Because he said he was Satoshi. So they were like, oh, it's him.
For what did they go after him for? I mean, did they...
Taxes.
Taxes.
Yeah. Immediately, they went after
him. That's Craig Wright's fault for being an idiot, I would suggest.
Right.
And, you know, if Satoshi Nakamoto revealed himself, and you know, the Australian government or whatever government said, all right, fine, but you owe us 35% in taxes, fine, if you'll accept it in Bitcoin.
All I'm saying is that if you claim to be Satoshi Nakamoto, reveal yourself to be Satoshi Nakamoto, allow yourself to be revealed as Satoshi Nakamoto, expect problems.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Joe, anything else you want to share?
Yeah, also, you were talking about the Byzantine generals and the lieutenants. Everybody had to, be in coordination with each other and stuff like mm-hmm. that. In World War II in France, when they had the Maginot Line, Hitler could have been stopped. This one general, I can't remember their names, but this one general asked for reinforcements when Hitler was invading. And he had 140,000 troops that he could have reinforced the other general with and, hold off Hitler and stuff, stop him even. And because he didn't like him, he didn't send the troops to help him.
He didn't like the other general, you're saying?
Yep.
Mm.
That's a historical fact and everything like that. I kind of thought that guy should have been shot for treason.
It all comes down to someone being petty, doesn't
it? Yeah, thank you.
Was he French or Belgian?
French.
Okay. But I thought the Nazis went around the Maginot Line through Belgium in order to take...
They went through Belgium, but they still faced the Maginot Line. They had to get they had to break through the line before they hit the river, or it would have ended up in trench warfare again like World War One.
Okay.
Thank you, Joe, for the call tonight.
Very interesting.
Definitely appreciate it. The number here is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Speaking of warfare, Zelensky and Ukraine are in the news again. And this is a bit of a follow-up on a story that we did earlier. I think it was this year. I think it was RT that had an in-depth report on this as something that was likely going to transpire, and now even the mainstream media in the form of the New York Times is picking up the story where Volodymyr Zelensky in Ukraine has now signed off on legislation that is significantly expanding the government's regulatory power over the news media. You know, that whole pro-democracy, pro-freedom, everybody loves freedom in Ukraine, that government that we're all supposed to buy into is this freedom-loving thing.
Isn't it amazing how people just automatically side with the Ukrainian government? Just because they're not Russia, knowing absolutely nothing about them, no matter what facts you reveal about the Ukrainian government, like the fact that they have an entire battalion of Nazis and they, you know, unleash child rapists into their military in order to get them out of prison. And then you have this on top of it. Zelensky, this is not the first time he's done something that was just horrifically anti-freedom. He dissolved the opposition party.
He did.
So his own political party, like, it would be like Joe Biden saying, the Republicans, you can no longer exist, and having the FBI right. or whoever go out there and kick in
capture
the door.
Them.
Yeah. Say, oh, no, there are no more Republicans. Everyone's a Democrat now. Zelensky did this in Ukraine.
Yeah, and now, according to the New York Times reporting on this, the media regulation bill expands the authority of Ukraine's state broadcasting regulator. They call them, so this is their equivalent of the FCC, okay? But they call it over there the National Council of Television and Radio Broadcasting, to cover online and print news media. It gives the regulator the power to fine media outlets, revoke licenses, and temporarily block certain online media outlets without a court order, and request that social media platforms and search giants like Google remove content that violates the law, according to the Ukrainian news media. So imagine if the FCC had jurisdiction over your websites, over your favorite websites.
And they didn't have to go through the courts anymore on top of that.
Well, the FCC can't go through the courts anyway, but yeah, what they're saying here is they could go through the court, or rather avoid going through the courts, to block certain online media outlets.
Right, so just with the flick of a pen, Zelensky can say, no more RT, no more Free Talk Live.
Total power over internet information. And this is supposed to be a government worth supporting? A government that cares about freedom? It's ridiculous. And even the New York Times can't avoid reporting on this now. There's more coming up here in moments. Hour 3 is on the way on Free Talk Live.
If you're like most Americans, you can see things are out of control. Global problems have local consequences. Too many of them. And if the next news headline spins us into chaos, you'd better be ready. Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Today's the day to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. And as you'd expect from a true preparedness company, our food kits are in stock and ship quickly. Those who know what's coming are preparing today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body Brain and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.